Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, guys. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicals2cheese and start browsing the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicals2cheese. Also, a huge special thanks to our patrons over at Patreon, who are currently Stephanie L., Terry Needleman, Max Lunig, Benjamin Lehrer, Chris O'Kelly, and Lily Ackles. They give us a little extra financial support that helps keep the lights on here at Musicals with Cheese. If you would like to join them in supporting us and get tons of fun perks such as patron-only commentaries, patron-only live streams, and tons more, join us at Patreon. We currently have up a Music Man commentary for the Matthew Broderick version, so that's up.
Oh, yeah, the Matthew Broderick masterpiece.
As well as our full Tony's live stream that will only be available to patrons, so you guys can hear me belligerently talk about theater actors.
Just got very drunk.
Do you want to talk about our affiliate link, Andrew?
Oh, yes. On top of all that, in our description, we have an affiliate link for Amazon if you'd like to... click that, you can buy anything on Amazon, and we will receive a cut of that with no extra cost for you. So, if you're going to buy anything, just use that link and you support us. So, thank you for your consideration.
Alright, at long last, let's get back to the real show. Hello, I'm Jesse McAnally.
And I'm Andrew DeWolf.
And welcome to Musicals with Cheese, a podcast where I try to get Andrew to like musical theater. And today we have an extra special guest.
Such a special guest.
We have podcaster, musician, writer, Kirk Hamilton. He's most well known for the Strong Song podcast and many other things. So, Kirk, thank you for joining us.
Hello, Jess. Hello, Andrew. It's very nice to be here.
Hello. So he's been here this whole time. He just listened to us chill.
I've just been hanging out, listening. You got that was those are some quality reads. I gotta say, I've heard a lot of ad reads in my time, and you got them just knocked them out in one.
We got them down pat. Like I feel like mm-hmm. people should be paying us for this. All right. Let's move on.
You thought you were so cool when you said that. Either way, Kirk.
I thought I'm so slick.
You chose what we're talking about today, so I'm going to let you introduce it.
I did choose what we were talking about today. We're talking about one of my favorite musicals. It's one that I only saw when I was a kid, and then I guess again on TV, and listened to mostly on CD as a child. This is Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice's musical, Jesus Christ Superstar. Jesus Christ Superstar is a 1970 rock opera with music by Andrew Lloyd Webber and lyrics by Tim Rice. The musical started as a rock opera concept album before its Broadway debut in 1971. The musical is mostly sung through with little spoken dialogue. It's loosely based on the Gospels account of the last week of Jesus' life, beginning with the preparation for the arrival of Jesus and his disciples in Jerusalem, and ending with the crucifixion. It depicts political and interpersonal struggles between Judas Iscariot and Jesus that are not present in the Bible. The work's depiction offers a free interpretation of the psychology of Jesus and other characters. Much of the plot centers on Judas, who is dissatisfied with the direction in which Jesus is steering his disciples. So, guys, what do we think about Jesus Christ Superstar? I know Kirk talked about his history with it, but Andrew, this was your first time diving into this.
This is actually my first time seeing it at all.
Oh, wow.
It's actually kind of surprising since it seems like it was a pretty popular movie, so it's weird I have never seen it. As a first viewing, it was actually very, very impressive.
So when you say the movie, you mean the 1973 movie?
Yes, the 1973 movie is the one that I watched for this.
That movie is a trip.
It is something else. That's what I watched. I also listened to the soundtrack as well, mm-hmm. as I usually do.
Was it the soundtrack or the cast recording?
Fucking, who cares?
You know, no, this is a this is a worthwhile distinction. So actually, the movie soundtrack was the one that I grew up listening to. And it's really good in some ways and really crusty and weird in some other ways. And I've only recently been listening to other versions of this. And going back and listening to the movie soundtrack, like the original, I guess it's the movie, I guess the movie cast recording. It's Tim Neely. Is that the guy's name?
And Ted Neely, yeah.
Ted Neely, that's it. I think he's the guy I saw live when I was like 12, too. Ted Neely and Carl Anderson playing Jesus and Judas. And they're both really good, but the recording is super weird. And I think maybe it works better in the movie. I haven't seen the movie in several years, but
it has a really 70s sound to it.
It does. And it's
like
loose,
psychedelic. Like, it sounds like a Pink Floyd album. I don't know.
It does. And there are times. So I went back to listen to that one when I was getting ready for this podcast. And there are times in the recording where it straight up sounds like the drums are like in a different room and can't hear everybody else. And the rhythm gets all messed up. And there are actual just mistakes like in the recording, which is really weird because when you go and listen to the cast recordings, there aren't any mistakes. They do it super well. Like some of them are almost too polished. So I actually grew up listening to the movie one that you listened to. It sounds like Andrew, which is kind of cool because we're coming from the same place.
I did also listen to the newer one with, the only thing I know is, they got different actors, some like more famous modern actors to do it. I'm not sure.
Like John Legend?
Yes, John Legend was in, who was he playing?
Jesus.
That was Jesus, yes. Yeah, so they got him, and I listened to some of that as well, and I think that one was more polished.
Oh yeah, definitely. That one's funny too. Well, that one's the one that they did on TV last year, which was, did either of you watch that, or Jess, have you seen that?
Yes, 100%. I wouldn't have missed that.
I didn't see that one, no.
It was pretty friggin' good, considering how weird and gimmicky those live TV Broadway shows have been, typically. Or I guess I only saw part of that Sound of Music one, and that was not...
We watched Rocky Horror or something like that, and that was something else.
That could be fun, I guess. That's sort of similar. It's like a rock, more of a rock musical than a standard one. With John Legend in particular, but just with that production, I thought it was really good and kind of fun to go back and listen to it.
I agree. I was really impressed with that production, like both like as like a live event. It felt like it one of the few live events that actually worked. I was mm-hmm. not as impressed with John Legend, but mostly because I am just too fond of the original vocalization choices of like every other album. So like when he doesn't right. quite go for the high notes, I'm like, oh. But
yeah,
everyone...
it's well, go ahead.
But everyone does good. It was basically what I was gonna say.
Yeah, they did a good job with it. I agree that he was like, it's cool to see an artist with a really distinct voice like John Legend put a spin on a character that requires that kind of vocal range. Because, yeah, he's got a really nice falsetto, but he doesn't have that scream that actually Ted Neely, I always associate his scream with that role. Though listening to, you know, I don't know, other versions of it, that West End Revival version. Is that Steve Balsamo? I have this whole list of like all the people who've played these roles over the years. And his falsetto is ridiculous. Like some of those high notes that he hits during, I don't know, like Guess the Man and some other songs are really out of control. So
I think
it was
the most out of control Jesus is Drew Sarich. Have you heard him?
Oh, who is he? I'm not sure. Which version is he on?
He was in the German, I think it's Amstetten production.
Oh,
as
interesting.
Well.
No, I definitely haven't heard him then.
His voice is literally, it's like high to begin with, so it goes even higher.
You know, it's funny that, so the musical that I've been recently obsessed with is Hamilton. I did a Strong Songs episode about Hamilton. I like really got into that one, and it's been fun doing the same thing to Jesus Christ Superstar and going and learning all the music on piano and stuff. And Hamilton is very, very similar to Jesus Christ Superstar. I almost think like some of the reason that people might be getting into Jesus Christ Superstar now is because they've checked out Hamilton and like are appreciating the similarities. There's all these structural similarities. But one of the things that I struggle with Hamilton is I didn't get to see the original cast. I listened to the original recording, of course, like a lot of people did. It's super good. And then I went and saw it in San Francisco and it was really cool, but it was that thing where you listen to the original cast recording and you get it in your head. And then you see, you know, a traveling production to it, and everyone's really, really good, but they're just not what you're used to, so it takes a little while.
You want it to sound exactly the same as what you've heard like a million times.
It's like, and it's not even about, kind of, it's like not about wanting it to sound like that, like, right, like, you know, it's not going to sound like, you know, whoever the people you've gotten used to. It's more just, it takes a minute to be like, oh, I've gotten so used to these characters sounding this way that it just seems like this is an imposter in the role, you know, pretending to be Angelica Schuyler. And with this, there
you're
are these
fraud,
like...
You're a fraud, Jesus.
Right, right. Where, well, and kind of, because this has been around for so long, you know, it's what, almost, God, is that right? It's almost 50. Oh my God, it's almost 50 years old. That's so crazy. Because it came out in 1970. There have been so many different people who've played the roles over the years, and there are all these different recordings. I mean, even just on Spotify, there's like 5 different versions. I've got the original, like this vinyl of the original concept album that my parents had that I now have. And that, you know, then there's that version, there's the movie version, there's the cast recording version. Like, even from the beginning, there were all these different versions of it. And now there's so many people who've played the roles that it kind of, it like transcends any one performance, which is neat because you can do what we're doing, right? You can like talk about the particulars of how one person sang the high notes for Jesus or whatever.
So, Kirk, I've got a question. Since you have watched a bunch of versions, what is your favorite version of this musical? Because each one is so very different from each other, and I think that's one of the best things about this musical specifically. Like, yeah, you can have something vastly different from the previous and still be the same thing.
It's a tough one, right? I'm not, like, I feel like it's a boring answer to say that I don't have a favorite, because I don't, but it's hard because there are aspects to each of them that I like. Like I was saying, so I really like Ted Neely's performance, and I really like Carl Anderson's performance in the movie. And I have that association with them because I grew up listening to them, and I just really like pictured Judas singing, you know, Heaven on Their Minds the way that Carl Anderson sings it in the beginning of that movie, which is super good. And I associate Ted Neely's like, get out! Like that crazy scream that he can do, you know, like that's just how I hear Jesus. Plus he has a couple of line reads where he's like, what you started, I didn't start it. Like he has that, he turns inward sometimes and his performance is really great. But also, like I was saying, listening to it now, I honestly found it hard to listen to, just listening to the music. Cause there was a time on that recording where it sounds to me like they superimpose a second drum track on top of an existing drum track because the existing one was so wrong. And you can hear double snare drum hits. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, I can't, I wish I'd made a note of which song it was, but I'm positive what I heard. And it's like so janky sounding at times. Or this,
there's like a lot of sloppiness, sloppiness.
And like there's noticeable. A wrong note in the piano early on, like they just hit a clunker and it's just in there. So I don't know what happened during that recording, but like, so that I don't like. And then I don't know, I was listening to the other versions I listened to are the concept album, and then I really do like that 1996 West End Revival recording. That band is ridiculously tight because it's like the 90s and everyone's knows how to produce something like this, and the drums just sound like bodacious and huge. The bass player is like kind of playing a lot of slap bass, and it's cool because he's hitting it really hard, but it's also kind of a lot of slap bass, and I actually sort of think it sounds better with finger bass. So I kind of have like my particular gripes about each version, I guess. I'm sure there's like more information than you're asking for, but it's hard to say. I do really like that 1996 version though. I've been enjoying listening to that because it's kind of new to me, and that's exciting on its own.
Have you watched the 2012 UK Arena Tour with Tim Minchin and Ben Forster?
No, I haven't. How is it?
It's like you say, it has moments, but there's a lot of, when they hit the new millennium, there was a lot of lyric changes, which irk me.
Oh, interesting. Like what?
Let's think, Gethsemane, in the 2012.
Gethsemane. That's, I pronounced that one wrong. Gethsemane is what I always call it. Gethsemane. I got it.
Gethsemane is kind of how you're supposed to pronounce it.
Gethsemane.
But they changed the final lines of that from God, my will is hard, but you hold every card, to God, thy will is done, take your only son.
Oh.
Which I'm like, that's an interesting one. And they also remove a lot of anachronisms, like one thing I'll say from Jesus is cool to infantile servants, the multitudes go. And a lot of lyric changes to make things rhyme instead of just rhyme in British.
Huh, that's interesting. That one line, especially in what is it again? Gethsemane. I've always thought of it as Gethsemane. I think just because I read it, Gethsemane. That line is an amazing line that you hold. I mean, that I feel like that's like a really important line for what he's realizing about how God is just not responding to him, and he's just like, well, okay, like this sucks, but I just have to do it. Sort of really changes the meaning there. I wonder why they did that.
Because Tim Rice has George Lucas syndrome. He likes to go in and change things quite a bit.
I mean, I guess he's entitled, but that's not as good of a line, I don't think.
But let's just think of ourselves like as writers at age, what were they? They were like 17, 18. They were kids when they wrote this. Like if I saw something when I was 18 and being like, at 60, like, let me just change that up a little
maybe
bit.
Maybe like fix that up a little bit. That's true.
I would do it.
True.
Just got to keep going back and changing everything. Why not?
I mean, basically. So what do we think of how the story is told? Because I know we're talking a lot about the music, and that's very much Kirk's wheelhouse, and he's doing a great job analyzing that.
Oh, but yeah, what I mean, I can go forever, but I'm also interested in what Andrew thinks more.
What do we think about the storytelling of this? Because really, it is interesting. Like, it is very common now to see, like, the enemy's point of view of the hero, like, as made famous now by Hamilton and all this, but this was the first time that was really used, and they also used it very well a few years later when they did Evita. So I'm curious, like, what do you guys think of that interpretation?
I definitely like the heavy focus on Judas, who just seems to be a much more interesting character than Jesus is in this, because Jesus just kind of sits around and doesn't really do very much other than get worshipped.
He complains.
And then feel sorry for himself, I guess. Whereas Judas, he definitely does complain a lot. Which I don't know if they're doing that on purpose or if there was like nothing else they could have done with that character. I feel like it's the Jesus story. You could definitely do more with him than just have him complain.
It's tricky when the character with the strongest inner conflict is Judas, right? Because he's the one with the decision to make. So dramatically, it makes sense to focus on Judas, where Jesus's whole role is kind of like, well, I have this thing set out in front of me. I know what it's going to be, and I just have to deal with that. And him dealing with it is interesting, but right, like Judas is just kind of built, at least in the structure and the time, like the story they chose to tell. He is kind of it was like a smart call, right, to focus on Judas.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you just have it as Jesus and Judas is, like, the side character, Jesus doesn't do very much. Mm-hmm. Things just kind of happen to him. And that's just not a fun way to tell a story in by any means. So there's a large focus on Judas as well as the other, like, villainous characters, which I guess is good and bad. Some of those characters I don't like their songs very much.
Oh, I remember when I was a kid, I just loved the guy who played Caiaphas in the movie. I guess I'm looking at what his name is, Frederick B. Owens. Just he has this ridiculous voice that he just sings so low, and I always just liked his deliveries. But yeah, some of those songs are just, I mean, this musical is a downer, right? I think that's the thing that really strikes me about it, especially the movie production. It's so weird and dark and just a bummer. Like, it's called Jesus Christ Superstar.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
basically both your main characters just die, right? Like, Judas kills
and
himself.
And it's also like
Jesus
the tale of the
crucified.
End, like, of the
and
bad times, basically. Like, they have a whole song where they're like, man, I really wish it was like it was at the beginning, where we were just having a good time and, like, spreading the good word and helping people. And it's sort of this sad, just the falling apart of a thing that, of course, then gives rise to this whole other bigger thing. But you don't see any of that happen, right? It doesn't even depict the resurrection, which I guess was controversial. So it's, like, very just, like, the doom and betrayal and death of Jesus, which is kind of surprising, especially given the name of the show. You would have thought, I don't know, I'm surprised I liked this as a kid, honestly. I did, but I guess I don't really know why.
I would say they're being very subversive with how they tell the story, though.
Yeah.
Like, not depicting the resurrection, not depicting any miracles.
Right.
Like, you don't really know if the writers are, if this is a Christian rock album, or if this is, you know, the writer saying, hey, this might be all BS, like, we're not really sure.
Right, like, maybe he was just a guy. And that's kind of that question is, like, at the heart of the musical, and that's what makes it so, it gives it that tension, right? And that's really cool that it's...
It also gives it, like,
an
edge.
No one knows.
Whereas, like, this is, it's not just a Christian rock thing where you show up and you're like, oh, Jesus is awesome! And then you go home and go to church and, you know, and go to bed.
I was going to ask about what you guys thought about how the Christian faith turned against this musical on first, like, glance at it, but then reclaimed it later on as it went on and became an institution.
You know, I don't know enough about what the Christian church was like in the 70s. Like, it, I've seen the sort of historical breakdown of how that works, and none of that surprises me. Like, it, the whole thing is, you know, it's built into the musical itself, and it exists outside of it. The idea that he's saying he's the son of God, and that that is like blasphemy within the musical, and then outside of the musical, they're saying, well, this is actually blasphemous that you're saying that maybe he wasn't the son of God. And, you know, when Herod is like, do a bunch of miracles, and he's like, no, I'm not going to do them, it kind of almost feels like the guys writing the musical are also like, no, we're not going to show him like walking on water or turning water into wine, because that's not the story we want to tell. They kind of wanted to imagine the story of Christ as a dude and just the apostles as a bunch of people. And it kind of has those anachronisms, and they just feel like kind of like flower people, these hippies out trying to do a cool thing. And that works really well. I mean, as a kid, I didn't grow up religious at all, and didn't, you know, I kind of knew the story and had gone to church some, but I didn't know a lot of that. And this was a wave in for me, like, to just learn the story. Like, I didn't know who Mary Magdalene was before I was listening to this. And I was like, oh, I thought she was Mary, like the Virgin Mary, because I thought there was one Mary. I didn't know anything. And then I found out, oh, there was like this whole character.
Probably not, but
likely not. And yeah, so that I thought was like a cool way to make it approachable. And again, it's another Hamilton parallel, actually, that like Hamilton does something similar by like refashioning an old story that we've heard a million times with like modern music and a different kind of a cast, and like, you know, doing the same kind of a thing, which can be a really cool storytelling technique.
But in more recent productions, they have shown Jesus's miracles.
Know any of this.
This bothered me when I saw it when I was a kid. I saw this with Ted Neely, because Ted Neely has played Jesus longer than Jesus played Jesus. 35 years now, I think, almost 40. So,
well,
yeah,
yeah, that's longer than Jesus lived.
Mm-hmm. No, in the musical, they said he only did it for 3 years, so.
Oh, right, but I mean, I think he was 33 when he died, so it's, like, longer than his entire life.
But nevertheless, I remember watching that production, and it starts with the overture. Instead of, like, anything cool, they have Jesus literally resurrecting Lazarus from the dead, and
it's like, that kind of ruins the whole rest of this.
Right.
It's like the whole, it's like, oh, no, actually, he is the son of God, and this is all real.
Yeah, it's like,
and
basically, it's like, oh, yeah, the, like, you know, mystery, or, like, you know, maybe he is, maybe he isn't. How about right away? Yeah, he definitely is. Okay.
That's definitely a choice.
And it's sandwiched at the end with that, with he's hung up there on the cross, and he's like, I am delivered, and then the cross falls away, and he floats across the audience, and I'm like, oh,
really?
God. Yeah.
Wow. That, I get, it's interesting. That like really illustrates the edge they walked in the original production of not going there and leaving it kind of ambiguous, which I definitely prefer. I'm sure there are people who love it, like who, you know, want to see that, and that's cool too. But like for me, yeah, no, I like the ambiguity a lot more. That's,
yeah,
that's,
I mean, when your Sunday school class puts it on, you can add all the miracles in, but like
sure.
If I'm watching a movie of it, I don't want to see that. Yeah, they also put off a very, like, in the 70s movie, there's a very heavy cult vibe going around, where, like, especially things Judas are saying, where he's like, you know, we were gonna help people, and we were gonna do all this, but really he's just talking to Jesus, who's sitting there getting worshipped. It's like,
Jim Jones.
What's going
on
here?
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about this. I got really into cult stuff like over the last few years of like watching the Jonestown documentary and stuff. And the 70s were such a cult time. But I haven't seen the movies since then. And that totally makes sense that it was the same time period and that everyone kind of had that on their minds, that they would kind of channel some of that. That's interesting.
So I'm going to say this is incredibly edgy. And, you know, it's interesting that this was able to come out in the 70s.
Yeah. It does kind of go to show
embraced.
Like how experimental people were in the 70s. There was so much. I mean, if there's one thing I've learned doing this music podcast, I'm a jazz musician. That was like my background, and then learned a bunch of other instruments after school and kind of got into rock. And I always knew a bunch of rock music, but going through the 70s and really learning what people were doing in the 1970s, that was a crazy decade for music. And there was so much experimental shit going on. I mean, that was like when Queen was doing their thing and ELO was doing their thing. And this whole like post Beatles experimental thing was happening. And at the same time, you've got Andrew Lloyd Webber like kind of coming out of nowhere and writing this musical. So it's a cool decade.
Absolutely.
Now, I've got a question for you guys in the presentation of this show. There's been a lot of presentations where they just portray it as the modern day time. Like Jesus is just dressed up like Johnny Depp and all that, or even Literally, that was what the
Johnny
2012
Depp.
The 2012 production literally paralleled Johnny Depp in their portrayal of Jesus. They had Judas and dreadlocks and like modern day cameras and all that. And while the 70s film was like in the desert, it still had some anachronisms. So how do you guys like this story portrayed? Do you like it portrayed like literally in the present day, or do you like a mix of both, or do you want just like the, like, how do you envision it when you listen to it?
It's definitely interesting to see like a bus, but then everyone still has spears.
Right, that's right. I'm remembering the movie.
But at the same time,
the beginning part with that bus.
It doesn't make a huge amount of sense, though, because like everyone has spears, but then right at the beginning of the show, you see them have a gun. Hmm. So it's like, okay, guns exist, but all the soldiers are using spears. Like, what's going on here? You got some like Black Panther kind of stuff going on, you know?
Yeah, I remember. So as a kid, again, I remember listening to the CD of the cast recording and of the movie recording. And on the cover, it's like him being crucified and a bunch of people standing around the cross. Or maybe it's just a bunch of people standing around a cross. I can't remember. But it is like everyone's wearing kind of period appropriate garb. But then one guy has a machine gun slung over his back. And I remember as a kid, it kind of blew my mind because I didn't get it. Because like I said, a lot of my experience of Jesus Christ Superstar is just listening to it. And I didn't see it. I saw one performance on stage when I was like 13 or something, and then saw the TV production and have seen like clips. But so I hadn't seen it, and I didn't think of it as being anachronistic, really. You know, it was just music, and it was music about a thing that happened, you know, thousands of years before electric guitars existed. But that didn't seem anachronistic. That was just like it's a musical. But then seeing that picture, I was like, why does he have a machine gun? what does this mean? And it took me a while to kind of understand. And then I think as I got older and I sort of understood, I got what they were going for. And there's like the part where what they're like being the news media and they're kind of interrogating him as he's being led away. And there are these things, or like, yeah, one thing I'll say for him, Jesus is cool, which, you know, I kind of started to understand that there were these anachronisms in the language. In terms of the actual stage production, I like a mix. I think it's fine just being ambiguous. It exists in this kind of dream space anyways. It doesn't need to be like it's really depicting one place and time. And actually, I haven't seen like a super modern production of it, but that seems like that would actually just be kind of cheesy.
Yeah, it was. Basically, in 2012, they did a production which is sung very well and everyone's doing their best performance wise, but they're just mocking the Wall Street protests. And basically,
yeah, like,
it's dumb.
Right. It's such a timeless story and it works super well, partly because it literally exists out of time. Like there's stuff from a lot of different time periods happening at once. The minute you try to make it topical, like, you know, that's very 2012, you know, and then you watch it now and it looks
it just dates it
dated.
Immediately.
Yeah,
it's like you
dated.
Watch it 2 years later and you're like, oh, remember when that stuff was happening?
Right. Which is like a shame of a thing to do to a very like shockingly timeless musical.
Hey guys, sorry to interrupt you in the middle of the show, but today I got a shill at you. Our show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. Tis that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese to get started today. Today, I am suggesting Unmasked by Andrew Lloyd Webber. In it, he goes into the creation of many of his early musicals all the way up to Phantom of the Opera, including Superstar and how that skyrocketed throughout America and the UK. It's narrated by Andrew Lloyd Webber and Derek Perkins. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. Again, that's audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese for your free audiobook.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that With brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, let's get back to the show, folks. Let's go into the music, guys. Can we just talk about how it's the best overture, like, almost in all of musical theater?
It is a hell of an overture. I'm, like, increasingly not, like, I get bored of a lot of overtures, but I always listen to the Jesus Christ Superstar overture.
It just gets me excited for everything to come. Like, it gives you a little sneak peek at everything in the best way, where it's just a ramping up and build towards something, where a lot of overtures feel like it's just
right stagnant. They feel obligatory, like, okay, here's just a little medley of all the songs you're gonna hear and here's the chorus. Where I'm trying to remember, and Jess, you've seen it more recently, there's like something happening on stage during the overture, right? Like, I remember in the movie they're like setting up their camp or something, but isn't there kind of a dramatic thing going on, and then he finally shows up when the Jesus Christ Superstar, like, when that music starts playing, it's like the lights all shine on him and he appears for the first time? But isn't there action going on stage during the orchestra?
It really depends on which production you're doing, in all honesty. Because the productions I've seen live, I saw two times, like, the same tour, and literally it was the Lazarus coming back from the dead scene, and I'm like, oh.
But I guess that's right. That's what you were saying. That's right.
But the John Legend production did this really cool thing where they're kind of like breaking down the stage. The 2012 Wall Street production does a bunch of security cameras and them going up against like police, like riot forces, like. And then Jesus appears at the Jesus Christ Superstar. The 2000 film. It's literally just a bunch of people graffitiing because that film is really bad.
Oh, man. Yeah,
but always,
musically,
that was when Jesus showed up, is when that coda comes on.
Right, yeah. I feel like that's when, I think in the production that I saw, that's when he showed up. And just musically, I think it's cool. It starts so, it's so sinister, and there's a lot of very sinister music, like the, like, that's a great, it's like the villain theme or whatever. But it, and then it all comes together on that sort of that bump, like that building thing. And that's another place actually where the movie soundtrack kind of falls apart. Like, the orchestra comes in and they're off rhythmically from the rhythm section. Like, for just 1 second, the drums come in and it's super nasty, and like the bass and guitar are like really grooving, and then the strings come in, it's that like da 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 da. I'm doing a bad job of singing it. But they come in and the rhythm is just a disaster. So if anyone wants to check this out, it's actually kind of interesting to like go listen to that version of it and like with headphones on and be like, wow, why is everybody playing in
it
like a different tempo?
Man. Like, you just don't get it.
Right. They're like, we're trying to make a statement about like how much tension there was, and it's like everyone was at a different rhythm, you know?
Yeah. Everyone's playing to like their own key, man. Like,
right. It's just like
it's raw.
It's an avant-garde statement about music.
Although it does play with time signatures quite a bit, so maybe it was intentional at first. And then they realized, hey, that sounds awful. Let's not do that.
Yeah, let's overdub a second drum set to make it sound.
Let's try to fix it, but not fix it.
But do our best.
I can actually state that that was not intentional, because Andrew Lloyd Webber hates the movie for the exact reason that Kirk's bringing
it
up.
Oh, does he really? Oh, I'm not surprised. Having just listened to it, I would fucking hate that. If I had written that music, I'd be like, what did you do to my music?
You couldn't record a second take?
Like, come on, guys. Like, give everyone headphones so they can hear each other. Let's just basic stuff.
If I am going to give the movie some credit, it knows which themes are going to what character very well. And a lot of films don't quite understand that. So, like, when you get the bum, 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 we see Judas. And when you get to Pilate's theme, you see him. Like, it introduces all the characters with their themes, like, in a way that makes the dum-dums know who we're supposed to care about.
Great job, guys.
And I would imagine a lot of people like experience it by seeing the movie, which is cool. Like, there should be more, and like not just stage movies, but like just more movies of Broadway productions in general, so more people can see this stuff. Like, one of the reasons this is so big is probably because there was a really big movie in 1973 that a lot of people watched and then their kids watched and stuff. So that is cool that it exists despite the musical issues that it had.
My mind is clearer now. At last, all too well, I can see where we all soon will be. If you strip away the myth from the man, you will see where we all soon will be.
All right. Do you guys want to talk about heaven on their minds and how that is?
Well, before we get into the music, can we talk about how they zoom in on Judas like 8 times in the movie? And it's like the dumbest thing.
There are definitely some directorial choices in that movie. Like I said, it was a few years ago when I saw it, but I remember being like, what the hell am I watching? The 70s.
You know what? Now that we're talking about it, there's a ton of like 70s movie stuff.
Oh, yeah.
In the 73 movie. Like, there's like freeze frames. There's like dance parts where they slow, like literally slow motion the dance.
I'm remembering the sequence. There's a sequence with tanks. What's the thing with tanks? And Judas is in the desert and there's like tanks all around. Am I making that up or did I hallucinate?
No, that's
that?
A thing. That is a thing. Yeah.
I remember that, just watching that and being like, what the, like, drugs were they doing in the 70s when they made this movie? Like,
no, they nailed the 70s feel, but it was made in the 70s. So I guess they weren't really going for it.
No, it was just everything was the 70s feel because it was 1973.
Exactly.
Can I bring up some directorial choices? The 73 film was directed by Norman Jewison, who also directed 2 years before that Fiddler on the Roof, which
Oh, really?
I think an insanely good film to screen adaptation. And as much as I do love the 73 film Jesus Christ Superstar, I do not think it's nearly as successful a film as Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah, it seems like he takes more chances. I'm not sure. I love Fiddler. I'm not sure if I've seen the movie or not. Maybe when I was a kid. But he makes a lot of choices. Not all of them work, but it is cool that he's at least going for something with it.
I do like seeing them zoom in on Judas like 8 times in a row right at the start of the movie. That's like, this is Judas. I'm in for a ride.
Here he is. It's Judas. Do you understand? That's Judas. I do like, so to get to Heaven on Their Minds, Jess, I really like this song. And I like that it starts with like a big feature for Judas because it kind of tells you right at the beginning. It's just like having Aaron Burr begin Hamilton. I'll stop talking about Hamilton, I promise. But it's very similar. And like, I'm guessing that Lin-Manuel Miranda was like, oh, that's a cool idea. Maybe I'll do something like that. But having Judas show up and he like, you get his perspective first, basically. Like, it establishes the tone of the whole thing is Judas is having doubts and he doesn't think what Jesus is doing is right. And he's like super worried about everything. And that is the tone of the whole musical. So it's like, as an introductory piece, it's like a really, it's like as a meta statement, it's kind of it's a very profound statement.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. It is at the top of almost every male singer's range.
Oh man, it's high.
And you get some very bad Judases because of that.
Well, man, and Carl Anderson in the movie, he does that like, like he like goes so high on this one part that nobody else does. Like, because I know that version really well. When I listen to the other ones, I'm always like, are they going to go for it? Are they going to go? They're like, please remember. Like, he's like wailing up there, like jumping around and doing all this like kind of high range yodeling that's super hard and like I don't know how to do, and he kills it. So
Judas,
it's a tough song.
Just nails it immediately. I love also that it opens with Judas because he's basically the main character, I would say.
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, I guess it's arguable if it's him or Jesus, but with it opening with him, I think there's a strong argument that it's him.
Yeah, I mean, and really he has, like, we get more of a sense of his internal monologue. I mean, we get some of Jesus's, but more of Judas's. And he has more of an arc. Like, it's a shitty arc. it's a bummer, but, like, he has a real narrative arc. Probably more than Jesus does, really.
I think it's a really interesting way to open a musical, especially coming from the not too long after like the Rodgers and Hammerstein like world. Like, this is really out there for an intro, and I think it's really effective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't imagine how people responded to this. I mean, I guess it was an album first, so it kind of had that going for it. Like, everyone was sort of broken in just listening to it and not thinking, okay, this needs to exist alongside these much more traditional musicals. But yeah, that I can't really even imagine what that response to that must have been back when it came out. And it's cool and the ointment sweet for the fire in your head and feet. Close your eyes and relax. Think of nothing tonight. Expensive, it should have been saved for the poor. Hey, tell me, why has it been wasted when we could have raised maybe 300 silver pieces or more?
All right, do you guys want to talk about Everything's All Right next? Do either of you have anything intense to say about that song, or is there another one that I should go to?
I mean, it's a pretty mellow song, right? It's like Mary's songs don't like knock my socks off exactly in this musical. They're not my favorites. She's like a useful character, and I think the show needed a female lead, and that's cool. Like, she's basically the only woman in the whole thing. But her songs are always just a little like it's tricky. It's like her role is to be this mellowing influence and to come in and calm things down and to sing the beautiful ballads, but also like she's always calming things down and singing the beautiful ballads when you're like, I want people to rock and have arguments, and that's kind of like more like the meat of the musical.
She's kind of like almost represents everything that's going wrong between Judas and Jesus, because there's a major point of contention between Judas and Jesus just because she's there, basically.
Right, right.
She's the Yoko.
Yeah, she's the Yoko, and Jesus is the Beatle.
Yeah, and Judas is like, what not? Judas is like trying to be like, I'm not saying that it's just because she's like, you know, a prostitute. That's not the problem. It's just like, that's kind of the problem, though. Jesus is like, dude, it's not cool. Like,
I can kind of see his point, so though. Not that she's a prostitute, but that like Jesus is enjoying himself too much. And having her around and having her bathing him. And it's, you know, it's like, Jesus, we're supposed to be changing the world here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tricky.
And here you
are
in your cave with Mary hanging on your sleeve, you know, like, what's going on?
It's a good like distillation of that. I mean, because like they both make sound arguments, right? Like later when he's like, oh, you're using this oil that we could use the money to help all these people. And Jesus is like, dude, we can't like end poverty though. And it's cool that the two characters are kind of having this discussion with one another, even while we know that it's so much more intense, like in Judas's mind than he's even letting on. And we also, of course, know that it's going to end really badly. So that kind of, is like hanging over
next,
everything. Right?
The room was full of wild and angry men. They seemed to hate this man. They fell on him and then they disappeared again. Then I saw thousands of millions crying for this man. And then I heard them mentioning my name.
You know, I really like Pilot's Dream. I think that
I love that song,
song
too.
Just as a song is really cool. I was actually learning, that was one of the ones that I learned before we did this. And
I like
just
the temple a lot too. I think that's a fun one.
That is that moment. And that also then in that Ted Neely version when he just gets to like, get out and like do his highest, his most squeezy scream. But yeah, I dig Pilot's Dream just as a song. It's like a really straightforward thing. that moves, you know, through a really straightforward chord progression, but has a couple of cool places. It goes to a couple of cool places and does some unexpected things. And it's just sung really beautifully in almost every version, because it's in like a nice, just, it's not like a metal, heavy metal screamer. It's just in a nice place in the male register, and the guy can just come out. And it introduces Pilot, I think.
To set up an antagonist was just a contemplative song about like, oh my gosh, I think everything's going to go badly, and I'm really worried about this. It's a nice, it's a better opening than if we just saw him in act two, like, who is this broken man?
Right.
Boppishly.
Right. That he comes in seeming like a dick, actually, which is sort of surprising given that he had that introduction. But then, of course, eventually it's, you learn that he's sort of really conflicted on this and doesn't want to kill Jesus and like doesn't really want any of this. And is kind of just a bureaucrat doing the thing that everybody else is like, no, you have to do this. And he almost like doesn't want to, which does, it makes him a much more interesting character.
Yeah. My favorite part of that is when I'm skipping ahead to Trial Before Pilot. The moment Pilot realizes who Jesus is, you have the return of the Pilot's Dream theme chime in.
Talk to me, Jesus Christ! Look at your Jesus Christ. I'll agree, he's mad. Or to be locked up. But that is not a reason to destroy him.
Yep. Like, and you see in almost every performance, like, oh God, it's him and it's this. And how do I get out of this? I'm in too deep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a great, yeah, that is a great moment. And right, like you kind of have to jump around some, right? Because so much of this stuff is setting up like themes and motifs that then come back later and like, you know, are only fully realized over the course of the musical.
You want to talk about the temple?
I just really, really love the scream that Jesus does, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And then the part after in that like crazy like seven rhythm, which is just like nutty to hear in a musical. I just love, I love that. And it's just very catchy. So I more liked it just as a song, and there's not really much to say about it as story wise.
I think it's a very interesting like little segment to have, both like him being the rich out, the rich of the richest, like stealing from each other and like selling prostitutes and all that, and he tears that down. And then he goes to the poor of the poorest, the weak of the weakest, and they just tear him down just as much as they did. Like, it is such a great dichotomy between that, showing that you can't win with either side, and all of them just kind of want to drain you.
And it kind of shows Jesus's actual feeling and why he's so unwilling to do anything, really, because, like, he goes to the poor, and all they want is just fix everything, and he can't do it, I guess. Or at least the musical saying he can't do it. I don't know the extent of his power.
The Bible said he couldn't do it either.
It starts to set up his sort of, you know, what he then is articulating in Gethsemane and in the agony in the garden, which I learned today in doing my research is what that is called. When he goes and kind of, yeah, he like expresses doubt. He's like, I can't do this. Like, why do I have to do this? And that sort of sets that up, right? That they're all like, help me, like, save me. And he wants to, he tries to, but he's like, there's just too many of you. There's not enough of me. I can't. That scene is really like that. I remember being terrified by that part as a kid, just the feeling of all of these helpless people kind of, they don't mean to hurt him or anything, but it's, he's just basically being like overwhelmed by this kind of, it's almost like a horror scene or something. But even though it's just needy people who need him to help them, it's like a great representation.
They're
of that.
Represented as like lepers, like almost like deformed and
right,
you know, disfigured. So they are kind of like monstrous in a way.
Can I bring up a little thing that was done in, I think it was the 2013 Broadway revival that I really think is interesting?
Sure.
That just this conversation has brought up. At the end of the temple scene where Jesus is torn apart by the lepers, he is saved by Judas and Mary, And Jesus and Judas have a little moment, and then Judas stomps off jealous of Mary being the one that he goes to for comfort and not him. And then we...
You know, I kind of like that.
Again, representing Mary is what is tearing them apart.
But also showing a possibly slight romantic jealousy between Judas.
Ooh. Oh, that's interesting. I like the idea of showing a little... This musical maybe could have used a little more of like just Jesus and Judas being on the same side. There's not really much of a sense of that because, you know, it kind of is structurally built in. Like it comes at the end. It's just there's a lot of water under the bridge with them. Clearly, at the very beginning, Judas has already got these really intense doubts. But I like that, just the idea of that, because it just for a minute reminds you that they're friends and that like Judas has had Jesus's back this whole time. And that almost makes it, you know, harder what he's going through and like the doubts that he's having and the terrible decision that he's going to make.
So let's talk about Gethsemane.
Oh man, this is my favorite song in the whole thing, despite my not knowing how to pronounce the name.
I think it's most people's favorite songs.
Not mine. I do like it though. This is a good song.
Kirk, tell me what you think about this song.
And this is like the real showcase for Jesus. So for like whoever is playing Jesus, like this is the moment to me anyways, where Jesus really gets to do his thing. Cause it covers so much ground. It goes through like, it feels like a saga. And a lot of the songs in this musical are actually pretty short. So this one just really like takes its time. And it gives Jesus a level of depth that the musical has hinted at and clearly sort of set up through the first act. But it feels like the entire first act is like building to this moment. To us, we keep seeing Jesus as this kind of, you know, he'll say things, kind of enigmatic things to people, and he'll stand in front of a big crowd and like he's this superstar and everything, but he's an abstraction. And Judas is the one that we've been hearing from, and Mary, Judas and Mary, we kind of like know their internal monologues, but Jesus hasn't done a whole lot. Like there've just been a few times where he's like, well, I know what's coming and none of you even care about me and blah, blah, blah. Like he'll say these little lines, but now we finally get to like know what he's thinking. And it's this really complicated thing where he is feeling really bitter and he's saying, I don't want this. I don't, you know, now that we're here at the end, you know, I don't know that I want to do this. What's the line? It's something he's like, you know, all about, you know, how and where, but I'm not so keen on why. It's a very clever, like Tim Ricey lyric. And there's a lot of just good lyrics where he's like, at the end, he says, you know, what we started, or he says, what you started, I didn't start it. And he's kind of just saying, you know, this is a really tough thing that this sort of abstract God that I believe in anyway has like chosen me to do. And I know that I'm going to go die really horribly. I don't know. Like, that's an amazing thing to have a monologue song, like a solo song about. And, I think that Ted Neely does a great job in the version that I grew up listening to and every other version. It's like the song I go to first to know, okay, does this Jesus have the chops? How are they at it? And, you know, and how do they pull it off? And actually, I thought that this was the real test of John Legend in that TV version. And he can't do the screams, you know, on the really intense part. But I really dug the way that he sang the song, too. So it's also just a good song. Like, I think it's got a great melody and it's got a really neat, you know, it's well put together.
I agree entirely. It's such a strange placement in the show because it's not even the opener of Act Two. It is the second song in Act Two.
Well, as you always say, Jess, the opener is where everyone's sitting down. You got to already be in your seat.
That's funny. That's a good point. Maybe that is why they did it. Because, I'm looking at the act breaks and I don't think of this show as like broken into these acts exactly. Like I think of everything as setting up Gethsemane, really. Like that's sort of the climactic moment almost of the whole musical. And then that's like a peak and then it all goes downhill and I get more and more bummed out. And like, I always listen to the end of this, like less than I listen to the first half. I think I bet a lot of people do that with probably a lot of musicals,
I disagree. I listen to the ending cause there's more things I like in that second half.
Mm. Yeah, I guess listening to it most recently, I found myself really liking the second half. So maybe it was more of a thing when I was younger. I just didn't like all the bummer, like trial, the 39 lashes and the crucifixion and all of that is just so dark. And I liked the parts where they were.
Oh, the 39 lashes is just, they do all of them and it goes on and on.
I think it's fabulous.
It's just tough. It's like, it's there, it's effective and I get why they put it in, but it's tough. Especially, yeah, when you're a kid and you're like, oh God, okay, wow.
All right.
They really do that.
So you are the Christ, yes, the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're divine. Change my water into wine. That's all you need do, and I'll know it's all true. Come on, you King of the Jews. Jesus, you just.
Andrew, I'll let you take the care of this one.
Oh man, my favorite song is King Herod's song because it's absolutely hilarious. And I love the dancing and I love his little boat and it's just perfect.
You gotta listen to, so if you're gonna listen to one other version of this, check out Alice Cooper doing it in that 1996 version.
I did check out Alice Cooper doing it and Alice Cooper does it really well as well. It's just so good. And in the movie, he does that little dance with his whole like posse. I don't know. It's like, you need that, like, lighthearted number, though, in this whole thing. It's like, thank God.
Yeah, it's tricky, because even though it is a silly, you know, jazzy song in a different style, it's still under that pall of just all of this awfulness. I mean, they're just dragging this guy from place to place. You know he's doomed, and he knows he's doomed, and everything is very sad. And it's definitely like a ray of sunshine through the clouds, though the clouds are still there, right? Like, it's still, you're like, well, we're going to crucify him pretty soon. So it's nice to have this kind of silly song, but I'm with you. It's a super fun song.
And I just love goofy, cheesy songs. So this is right up my alley. It's perfect.
The ridiculous villain songs are always fun.
Ridiculous villain songs are maybe the best songs that can exist.
Yeah, they're a lot of times they're pretty great.
So do we want to talk about Superstar now? Just jump right to it. It's an unprecedented song. Like, I can't compare it to anything else where it's just, like, critiquing the main character who is also one of the biggest religious figures in the known world about every choice he made.
Yeah.
As he's about to be dead.
Well, and it's kind of like one of the moments where... It's another moment of ambiguity, right? Because it's not clear whether this is Judas's spirit, like, and Jesus is actually hearing him, or whether this is like a ghost, or whether this is just a memory, or whether this is just happening for us. And it's like a, you know, the Shakespeare thing where they turn and talk to the audience for a second. Like, what exactly is
That's
happening?
That's kind of,
and
my thought is, like, it's just kind of a show for the audience, and it's not really happening.
Right.
But...
I don't think it's like Jacob's Ladder style, like him just seeing this was he's dying and bleeding out.
You've said that for like the last five shows that we've done, is that it's Jacob Ladder style. And no, it's not. It's either that or Judas is in hell. And this is his torment, is he has to talk about Jesus all the time.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking at the lyrics right now. And this, it does kind of like, this is where he says Israel in 4 BC had no mass communication. That's a lyric in the song. Did they change that one, Jess? Has that never been changed, or is that him?
Nope, that's stuck around.
because he is now, you know, outside of things and is speaking to us, it's okay for him to talk in modern terminology?
Yeah, he's the genie now, so he can turn into Robin Williams or Will Smith.
Right. Yeah, you know, this really also totally supports the whole Judas's protagonist thing. I mean, the fact that he begins the whole musical with his thoughts and then ends the whole musical by zooming out and saying to all of us, like, okay, well, here are all the weird questions that I'm left with about this guy. Like, what was his deal? Is pretty striking when you put that all together.
And then I think the song is great. It became a hit song for a reason. Like, it's... Mm-hmm. Commentary, it is like biting, it's satirical, and also it's catchy. You can't avoid the fact, you can't not hum this.
No, right. It brings back. I mean, it's like we've been building toward the whole musical. You keep hearing that, like, and that line. You don't really. Do they ever sing it before this point? Like, does the choir come in and actually sing those lyrics? Jesus Christ, who are you? What have you sacrificed? Like, I feel like.
Yes, in Hosanna.
Oh, that's
right.
When
they hear him coming up.
Yeah. But it's definitely like it feels like the whole thing has been kind of building to this point. Though then it's not really the end, right? Because then you have to watch Christ get crucified and like die, which is like...
I mean, they could have ended it before he gets crucified and just be like, all right, it's over.
I think they could have, but yeah. They didn't want to, because the crucifixion is probably my favorite piece Andrew Lloyd Webber has ever written, because he has never done anything like it before since.
I'm thirsty. Oh God, I'm thirsty! Oh, I'm thirsty.
It is just the sound of a man dying. Mm-hmm. Like, the ideal horrific noises that would be, and the dissonance of that, like, musically. And I think it's done very well on the albums. I don't think it's used nearly as well in the film, but, like, in every live production, it is just, like, this score screaming at you, and just... It used to give me nightmares when I was a kid when I listened to it. It's terrifying sounding.
Yeah, I remember the visual of him on the cross during that sequence when we saw a production of it as a kid. And I kind of feel like I should ask my parents about this, if they remember this, whether they were kind of freaked out by the end of like bringing their kids to see this show, because that part is heavy. And I have a vivid memory of just that. It's like it's backlit. It was backlit. This production I saw, and like really dramatic and terrifying. And the music, like you said, yeah, it sounds like a horror movie or something. It's like this huge like cacophony. And he's just slowly dying and like despairing and then calling out for his mother. And then just sort of, he's like, I'm thirsty. It's really grim shit. And seeing that as a kid was pretty intense, especially if you don't get, as you know, the original productions didn't get, you don't get the happy, oh, and then he came back from the dead and like, and it was great. It's just like, nope, they like brutally murdered this guy and he died really slowly and badly. And that was the end. And then it just ends.
Bye.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thanks for your money. Like, and which is totally wild.
It is wicked. And then it goes into one of Andrew Lloyd Webber's other great pieces, John 1941, which is just beautiful. And it's a haunting way to end the show. Is there anything else we got to say about the songs at all?
I don't know. They're
that's
good.
That's all I've got to say.
Yeah, I'm with you, Andrew, on the odd time signature stuff. I really like all of the stuff in 5 and 7 that Andrew Lloyd Webber likes to throw in there. Like, even in his other musicals, like in Cats, there's some cool time signature stuff that he does, as corny as Cats is.
Cats is fantastic.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, there's some songs in Cats are very good. Cats is odd. But anyways, I don't want to sidetrack us onto Cats. But I really dig how many like risks he takes musically, and then how well everybody just pulls them off. I think it's just like a bunch of really cool, weird, interesting music. And it's been fun learning it on piano. Also, all the dissonance. Man, some of those trumpet parts that like... where they like written the trumpets to be in half steps to one another. So if you played on piano, just put your fingers right next to each other and it's like... It just sounds terrible, but that's on purpose to like make it sound kind of grindy and dense and tense. And that is really cool. So yeah, I think the music is super good.
All right, and now we have a new segment that we're trying out, starting right now.
Oh boy.
Oh God! Oh, new segment!
Get excited.
It's trivia time. We've done this before, but we did a whole episode, and it was a disaster, and everyone loved it. So, we're bringing it back. Trivia time. Kirk has written some questions for Jess, and Jess has written some questions for Kirk.
And these are all related to Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yes, that's true. It's all related to the episode here. Here is the first question. Kirk, are you ready?
I am so ready.
All right. The original concept album of Jesus Christ Superstar had Murray Head as Judas. Murray Head's brother is also very well known in the cult musical theater world. What is his name?
I know this. His name is Anthony. Full name is Anthony Stewart Head, also known as Giles in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh my goodness, he freaking nails it right away. Jess, are you going easy on our guests here? That's not okay.
It's funny. Do you remember when he sings Behind Blue Eyes on Buffy the Vampire Slayer? There's this scene where they walk in on him in a cafe and he's playing guitar and he's like got an amazing voice because Anthony Head has an amazing voice. And that was, I remember watching that when I was, I don't know, in my 20s and then thinking, whoa, who the hell is this guy? He sounds great. And then I looked him up and found out, oh, he's like a big deal in the theater world.
Mm-hmm. He's great. Anthony Stewart Head is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's one point for Kirk.
Feeling good about that.
We're moving over to Jess now.
Okay, let's go.
Jess, are you ready?
I'm ready.
A singer from which band played Mary Magdalene in the 1972 Swedish production of this show?
Oh, God. I'm going to guess ABBA.
Oh, my God. He nails it. Does he need the singer's name?
The question is, can you guess the specific singer's name?
Oh, shoot.
That's a stretch. I feel like you did pretty good there.
Well, the way the question is worded makes it sound like he needs the band.
Oh yeah, you're right. Actually,
a singer from which band? That sounds mm-hmm. like he wants the band name.
You're right. No, I wrote that question, and you're correct. That is how it is worded. It is Agneta Fältskog, who is one of the two singers of ABBA.
I wouldn't know how to pronounce that, but so far we're one for one. So
don't worry, I wouldn't have known how to pronounce that either, and I may have made that question unintentionally.
I only learned
easier.
How to pronounce her name because I did an episode on Dancing Queen, which, by the way, amazing song.
Yes, yes, I can't wait to do Mamma Mia because I've done a whole 180 on that entire musical.
So that's 1-1. We're tied up at this point. Kirk, are you ready for your next question?
I guess I am.
The song, King Herod's Song, which I guess you probably could have just said King Herod's Song, was written for another Andrew Lloyd Webber musical that never came to be. What was the song's original title?
I have no idea. It was called I'm a Bad Dude.
Can I sing it? Do I sing it? Oh, try it and see. And that's how it goes.
Oh, try it and see. Interesting.
So
All right.
Try it and see is what it was, apparently.
All right. Well, you learn something new every day.
All right. Well, we're still tied. It's still 1-1. So we're moving over back to Jess.
I could lose.
Jess could conceivably lose.
Very conceivably. Very possibly.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
What teenage, soon-to-be movie musical superstar auditioned for the role of Jesus for the 1973 movie, only to not get the part?
Soon-to-be teenage superstar.
Soon-to-be movie musical superstar.
Gotcha. I'm going to say John Travolta.
Oh, look at this guy.
Oh, my God. Fucking gets it.
This guy knows his stuff.
Did I really fucking get it?
Yeah, it was John Travolta.
Who the fuck would... cast him in that role.
Can we just imagine this with John Travolta as Jesus?
Ever since I have been imagining it ever since I wrote that question, and it has been delightful.
I said that as a joke because I didn't know. I'm sorry, Kurt.
Well done.
Okay. Well, okay.
This last question is worth 20 points. This entire
exercise. Okay, so the next question is worth 2 points. Nullifying everything we just did.
This is like Final Jeopardy. This is exciting.
Are you both ready for the next question? This is the final question.
I'm ready.
So ready.
All right. Remember, type it in, and then whoever wins it will say the answer, and we'll pretend that's how it happened. All right. How many pounds of milk does it take to make 1 pound of cheese?
What?
Do we do like whoever's closest gets it or?
Yes, whoever's closest.
All right. Who typed in 20?
That's me.
Okay, so Kirk types in 20. Jess typed in 9,900,999.
You're missing a decimal
at the
front.
There's a decimal point there.
Oh, there's a decimal at the front. Are we doing Price is Right rules? Because you basically just cheated. All right, Price. You know what? Fuck it. We're not doing... This is Jeopardy rules. You both are fucking wrong.
Okay.
It's 10 pounds of cheese to make 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of cheese.
Ah, I should have guessed... almost guessed 10.
And nobody gets the bonus points.
Oh, well. Those bonus points just sailed on by.
Those bonus points sailed by. I'm
just
sorry,
just waving
Kirk.
At them as they pass.
Jess has just won his first Musicals with Cheese trivia victory.
The reigning champion. Well played, Jess.
Well, yay. Now he is. Brent won the first one.
Oh, okay. You've reclaimed your championship title.
Christ, I know you can hear me, but I only did what you wanted me to. Christ, I'd sell out the nation, for I have been saddled with the murder of you. I have been spattered with innocent blood. I shall be dragged through the slime and the mud. I have been spattered with innocent blood. I shall be dragged through the slime and the slime and the slime and the mud.
What's our overall thoughts? What's, Jess, why don't you start us off?
Jesus Christ Superstar is a great musical, probably Andrew Lloyd Webber's best, and he will never top it. I have no complaints with it altogether.
Yeah, I think Jesus Christ Superstar like changed what I thought a musical was. It was influential on me as a kid in ways that I probably don't fully understand, and I'll always think of it as one of the high watermarks for like what a musical can be. So agree, I love this musical pretty unreservedly.
I thought it was fantastic. A lot of the music is really good. The movie version is a little iffy, so you know that's take it or leave it with that one, but. Definitely at least listen to some of the more recent, it sounds like the more recent recordings are the better ones to go with, so.
Yeah, they're good.
I'd go with those. As far as my cheese rating, I'm going to give this a Danbo cheese, which has the nickname King Christian.
All right, nice. And my cheese rating is Christian cheese made in Oklahoma.
Ooh.
What about you, Kirk? What's your cheese rating?
My cheese rating is imported mozzarella cheese, which is delicious both on salads and on pizza.
Fantastic.
That is an excellent thought. All right.
That is great. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kirk, for joining us. I really appreciate it. Is there anything you want to promote out there? Like, feel free to just spit it out into the universe and let them know where to find you, because you do great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I guess mainly just Strong Songs, which is a podcast about music. I think people listening to the show would probably dig it. It's at strongsongspodcast.com, and it's on Apple and Stitcher and all the podcast apps. And I'm also on Twitter at Kirk, K-I-R-K Hamilton, if you want to find me. That's my main social media outlet. But yeah, thanks a lot for having me, guys. This was super fun.
No, and anytime you want to come back, here's always a spot here for you, Kirk. You were a great guest. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership.
Right back into it,
just
boys.
Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. Be sure, once again, to check out Kirk's incredible podcast, Strong Songs. It is Lin-Manuel Miranda approved, so if you don't need our recommendation, that's his. Also, please follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and all the other podcast forums on Musicals with Cheese. We're on Twitter at Cheesy Musicals. Our Patreon is Musicals with Cheese. We got a bunch of new patrons, and we got a lot of new content up there, so why don't you go join us? Give us some dollars.
What was the Matthew Broderick came out very recently. Excellent.
Matthew Broderick Music Man episode, as well as our Tony's live stream. So that's all up there for you to enjoy. Our YouTube page is Musicals with Cheese. There's currently a brand new video up right now, if you're listening to this. Feel free to shoot us an email at musicaltheaterlives@gmail.com. Our title card is created by Jolene Casco. Follow her on Instagram at Jolene Casco. All right, Kirk, is there anything you want to say before we wrap this on up?
No, this was a lot of fun. Thanks again.
Thanks
all
for
right,
coming.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for coming. You're incredible, Kirk, and we appreciate your time tonight.
Cheers.
All right. We'll see you next time on Musicals with Cheese.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suffs celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical, Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.